down deep inside of every man, there's a little boy, an Atari fan, and without any doubt, the boy will come out when he plays a game from Atari. Have you played Atari today?
Give a man an Atari game and he'll turn into a little boy. But don't worry, he'll be grown up enough to share it.
Have you played Atari today?
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast. This is episode 19. On this week's episode, we're going to be covering the classic gaming console, the Atari 2600, also known as the video computer system. But before we get into that, let me introduce the host. My name's Sean, and with me, as always, the collector of collections, Mr. Rob Flack-O'Hara.
What's up, everybody? By the way, Sean, I have changed tonight's show. We are not doing the Atari 2600. This is the now all Breaking Bad podcast.
I've changed it.
Yeah, last night was the finale. And so unless there was an Atari 2600 Breaking Bad game, I don't know if anybody has made one of those. I would play that.
Well, isn't there a site that actually makes games now or something?
There is. Yeah, they have guys that are making new games. There was a Halo game for Atari 2600. There's lots of new homebrew games. I'm sure we'll be talking about that. So if anybody's out there and wants to make me a Breaking Bad game, you know, last week I was in Tempe, Arizona. I drove to Tempe for a training class, and I came back and I went through Albuquerque, which is where they film Breaking Bad. And so, you know, I did about 10 years ago, I got the DVD for Weird Al's UHF. I think we've mentioned UHF on the show. We should do a UHF episode one of these times. But on the DVD commentary, he lists all these filming locations. And so we went, and it was filmed in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is like 2 hours from me. So a buddy of mine and I, we drove to Tulsa, and we went and we took pictures of all these locations. But it was such a pain. You know, we were actually using Microsoft MapPoint to get the locations, you know, on a map. And then we had a GPS that was USB, and we're driving around with a laptop in the car. And it was like, at one point we blew the fuses in the car because we had all this stuff plugged in, you know, and it was crazy. And now, you know, I since I knew this was the last weekend for Breaking Bad and I was driving through Albuquerque, I got on my phone and it was like, hey, here's, you know, Walter White's house. Here's the address. And I punched it on the GPS and I drive to these people's house and take a picture. And so much, much easier 10 years later.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I used to keep like a collection of I used to like to collect old road maps, road atlases and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I'd always keep a couple tucked in the car. And now it's like, what's the point?
Yeah,
I just took them all out.
Yeah, I mean, they get outdated so fast, too. Now you just download the, you know, whatever, the new version of maps for your GPS or whatever. Or on my phone, you know, it just tells me, hey, there's new maps available.
Yeah, well, you're on iOS, so I don't know how much I trust. You might want some of my old maps.
You know, I have a map program, Navigon.
Yeah.
And I like it, but it does this feature where it doesn't download all the state maps at once because it's trying to save you space. So when you install it, it only installs the map of whatever state you're in when you install, you know, the app. So I always forget. So like I drove down to Texas and I'm like, hey, where's the nearest gas station? And it goes, well, there's no gas stations in Texas. I'm like, what? Something's wrong with this thing, you know? And then I it's like, oh, do you want to install the map? And now you got to download 50 meg over 3G, you know? So I always forget to, I need to update it like before I get to where I need it. So now I have to sit, you know, at a four-way stop and I have to download 50 meg because I'm so dumb. I don't know how to find anything without the GPS anymore. Didn't you say you went on a trip and you had like two or three GPSs hooked up at once or something?
Yeah. When I went to the Ohio Linux Fest last year, I had my tablet, which had a, not Navigon, but Nav Free USA, which is, I don't know if it's available on iOS. I'm an Android guy. So you don't need to have GPS. You can pre-cache the maps. And so I had that, and I had my phone, and then I had my TomTom. Yeah, I look like such a dork.
I want the the entire cabin of my car to look like the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah,
I want that. My iPod, the phone, the GPS. If I can open a laptop there, and I'll be doing stuff on all of them too. I'm the guy that will eventually rear-end you at a stoplight, and then when you and you'll be mad. You'll come back and you'll be like, "What are you doing?" And I'm going to have a stupid answer. I was watching Dungeons and Dragons on my iPod and playing Dungeons and Dragons on the laptop while I was driving.
Nice. Well, we also have another guest with us. If you're going to do an Atari episode, and it's kind of nice because we have three different tiers. You got me, who had it as a kid, loved it, and just started playing again really recently. Then you have Rob, who knows a lot about the Atari, has a lot of games, a lot of systems, which I thank for my latest system. I'll get into that later. But then we've got a guy that really knows these games inside and out. And you may have heard him. He has a podcast, the Atari 2600 Game by Game Podcast. Here joining us this week is Ferg. What's going on, Ferg? Woo.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I'm really glad to be here. I'm also very nervous because I don't have a script. I think I told you guys that already. But hopefully I can, I don't know.
Sorry. You'll be fine. This is what I've learned, Furry. When you don't know what to say next, you just kind of throw it at Rob.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. I always have something. I'm always ready. I'm always on standby.
Okay. I'll remember that.
Yeah. And speaking of throwing it to Rob, why don't you, it's not a movie, but why don't you give us our background of the Atari 2600?
Right. Well, today's show is about the Atari 2600. It was originally called the Atari VCS, or a video computer system, when it was released. Later, when the Atari 5200 was released, they kind of retro renamed this console as the Atari 2600. It was released in September of 1977, and it was originally bundled with two joysticks, two paddles, and a game. Originally, that was Combat, but later that changed to Pac-Man. And it was originally sold for $199. Now, a couple things jumped out at me when I read through these specs. First of all, I have bought, I own consoles, and the Atari 2600 is probably the oldest console. I don't have anything older than that, really, but all the way up to the modern stuff. And I got to tell you, when I came home with, I'm pretty sure it was my PlayStation 2. I camped out for the PlayStation 2, bought a PlayStation 2, came home, unboxed it, and found out that there was no game in it, which seems like a crime, really, that you can actually sell a console that you would get home and not even be able to play a game on it. I know with the original PlayStation, I think it came with a demo disc or something. So even, you know, back then, unless it was a special package deal, but
I think mine did. I think that my original PlayStation came with, or no, I'm thinking of Sega Saturn. I think it came with a game called Panzer Dragon.
Okay, okay,
which had really good intros, but the game sucked.
I am fortunate in the way that I think my PlayStation came with a demo disc that had like the first level of Tomb Raider, maybe, and the first level of Crash Bandicoot, and I'm so terrible at games that I never beat the first level. So it was like getting a lot of games at once for me. But yeah, so this came with, and it came with two joysticks, and I don't remember if I mentioned this on the air or off the air last week, but normally when I buy a console, I will buy as many controllers as that console will handle. So when I bought a PlayStation 3, not only did I have to shell out, I bought one at launch. It was $600. But since it can handle four controllers, I bought an additional three controllers at $50 each. So that it gets real expensive in a hurry. But the Atari, when it launched, you got two joysticks. So, you know, you could take this thing home. You could plug in Combat, which is probably not thought of very highly as far in game history or whatever, but Combat was a lot of fun, and we could talk about Combat. But you had two joysticks, you had everything you needed to take this thing home, hook it up to your TV, and start playing games.
Yeah, I love Combat, you know, as a kid, you know, and Pac-Man, you know, simple games, but I definitely enjoyed them. And I'm sad because it's the one that I have right now won't play.
What, like, Combat?
Damn. Yeah, it's one of those, yeah. One of the, well, let me just say, like, Rob basically sent me inadvertently the best birthday present I got this week. It was awesome. He was nice enough to we talked a few weeks back, and just talking about the Atari 2600, I told him I had a six switch Woody, and he's like, look, I got one, I'll hook you up. And he sent me that console, paddles, the joystick, some games, and I was just able to, well, I think what I get like Thursday, I think I got it, or Wednesday or Thursday last week, and I was just so busy I didn't get to hook it up until Saturday. So I cleaned it all up, got out some Q-tips and some baby wipes, and got in all the groove. Man, that thing looks brand new.
Nice. Yeah, I knew it could use some cleaning. I and Ferg, you probably have had similar experiences, but you know, Atari, especially this era, I see a lot of collecting things go in kind of 20-year cycles, you know. So Atari 2600 was big, late 70s, early 80s. And then during the 90s, there was a big dip where people weren't really – it was kind of before the big retro push, you know, retro collecting. You know, it was a very niche type of hobby, and you didn't have the internet to help you do it. So I spent a lot of time going to thrift stores, going to garage sales. When people heard that you were some weirdo that was collecting old Atari stuff, they would say, yeah, I got one of those in my garage. They would give you their stuff, you know? And so, and I'm pretty sure on the front of that console that I sent Sean, it had a price tag. I want to say it was like 49 cents or something, but, but I left it on there because, and I do that with some of my old stuff because during that time I went to thrift stores and I was like, here's an Atari for a buck. And, like I was talking about earlier, I already had an Atari or two Ataris or five Ataris. I don't know, but you know, I would say, well, there's going to be somebody else looking for this. So I would get it and, you know, just set it aside. And then eventually, you know, just like when Sean said, hey, I wish I had one. I was like, God, I wish I had one less, you know. I got a stack of them in the garage or whatever. But I'm sure, Ferg, I'm sure you've picked up bulk purchases before to get cartridges and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you buy like a – there was one I bought in the 90s. It was a regular system with the controllers and everything and like 50 games. I only bought it for two games that were in there. It cost me $50, but it was worth it because I didn't have those games.
Yep. I went to a garage sale. This is probably early 2000s, and there was a box that had an Atari and the joysticks and stuff. And actually, I had like four joysticks, and it had $10 on it. And, you know, at that point, I already had a few Ataris, but I think this was a black Evader one, and we're going to talk about the variations here in a minute. But it was one I didn't have, so I thought, that's worth $10. And so as I picked it up, the lady was like, well, don't forget the thing of games under it. And it was, you remember the fake wood kind of little things where the drawers that pulled out and you stored games in it or whatever. And it was filled with games. And, you know, like a lot of those purchases, I would say 90% of it was your normal crap. I mean, you're going to have Pac-Man, you're going to have Pitfall, you're going to have that kind of stuff. But I remember there was Double Dragon was in there, and I want to say Red Baron. I don't know. Is it Red Baron? I don't know. But
yeah, Snoopy versus the Red Baron.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of, you know, kind of mid-range rare stuff that that I, you know, when I bought it, I didn't even know was coming with that. But yeah. So and Sean, I told Sean, because of that, you would end up with two copies of Pitfall, or three, or five, or ten, or whatever, depending on how many of these lots you've bought over the years. And so then when somebody says, hey, I want an Atari, then you go through and you just look at the stack, and you're like, oh, well, I have two Pitfalls, and they're not a, you know, a rarity or variation of anything, you know. So you're like, okay, well, there you go. Here's a Pitfall. Here's a Pac-Man. Here's a Miss Pac-Man. Here's whatever, you know. So Sean, not to make it sound like I sent you a bunch of crap, but I sent you some duplicates that I had laying around.
Well, I was very appreciative of what you sent. And like I said, the Atari, it cleaned up perfect. It didn't have a price sticker on it. What it did have on the front of the wood grain, and I kind of was like, maybe I should take this off. But then I'm looking at it. It looked like someone had put a little sticker on there. And what it was, do you guys remember, like it was like a little clear paper stencil where you put it on another, like an actual sheet of paper, and you would take your pencil and scribble on the back, and it would push it, whatever. It wasn't a sticker, but
like a transfer kind of thing or something?
Yeah. And they were big when we were kids. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, holy crap, it's the General Lee smashing into a police car. And what they did was they took a piece of like scotch tape and put it over it.
So it wouldn't get scratched up. I see.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And I honestly kind of struggled with, do I leave it on? Do I not leave it on? And I'm like, it's not my original system. So mm-hmm. in honor of whoever owned it at one time, I'll just leave it on. So
I did that. I bought a stack of games at a garage sale one time and I looked at them and they were all, you know, the stickers, the labels were all okay and everything. And so I didn't even notice it. It was like a shoebox full of games. I just glanced at them and I got them home and I turned over the backside and in the back of the first one in like a paint pen, you know, it said Randy G. And I was like, all right. And then I look at the second one and it was Randy G. And so Randy G had gone through and written his, probably Randy G's mother didn't want Randy G to lose his games at school or something. But so every one of these cartridges, every now and then I'll pull one out and I'm like, oh, there's old Randy G, you know? And the same thing, I thought I could probably get this off with, Goof Off or Goo Gone or something, you know, but I thought, you know, Randy G's mom put a lot of time into writing his name on all these games. So I just leave it on there.
Yeah. Conversation piece.
Sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, there were a lot of different models and everything. So Ferg, you want to kind of go through some of the different systems and models that they had for the Atari?
Yeah, let's do that. The first one that came out was the Heavy Sixer, they call it now. I didn't know what that was when I first started collecting, and I know I passed some up. I still don't have one. And why it's called the Heavy Sixer is because it has more of the RF shielding in there, which makes it a lot heavier. And you can actually tell there's the front is kind of, it's more straight than curved, the edges.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got rid of some of the shielding, and I guess they're calling it a Light Sixer now. They used to call it a six-switch Woody, too. So the first two had the six switches on the front.
The Woody is the wood.
It had the wood veneer piece in the front.
Okay.
Yeah. And then they switched to a four-switch. They moved the difficulty switches in the back, and that one had the wood veneer, too. And then they took that one, and you were talking about the Vader. That's a collector term, I guess. it's black instead of wood grain because I guess it was starting to get to be the mid 80s now and not the 70s anymore. So the wood grain was on its way out. And then the last one that Atari made was the Junior that came out in 86, I think it was, after the Nintendo became popular and they wanted to sell all their back stock of old 2600 games. So they made it, it's a really small, it's a lot sleeker, and actually there's like a metal rainbow band on the 5200 and the 7800, and that the Junior has that also now.
Yeah, I think isn't there a Junior variation too? It seems like I had two Juniors for some reason too, like there's a big rainbow one and a little rainbow.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure that when I was comparing the ones I had that they were different, but I can't remember. I think it was that rainbow band though that was different.
So you said those are all the ones that Atari made?
Atari made, yeah. Okay. So they also had the deal with Sears that went back to when they were making Pong consoles. So Sears sold their own console called the Sears Telegames Arcade. And that was branded by Sears, but it looked exactly like the Heavy Sixer or the Light Sixer, actually. I guess they did have Heavy Sixers. I don't think that Sears went to the 4-switch. I'm not sure about that, though.
Is it inside? Is it still the same as a regular Atari?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Atari made it for them. I'm pretty sure they did. And they also rebranded all the games. It changed some of the game names and stuff like that.
Well, let me ask you this. So before they had the Sears branded Ataris, but they sold, Sears was like the retailer, weren't they?
Yes.
All right. Because before I knew exactly, like I'm going to hold here and I know it's audio podcast, but my mother kept all the manuals for the games and it has like all these catalogs and it comes with a big poster.
Mm-hmm.
And it said Sears on it. And I'm like, I don't remember it being a Sears branded with the green print on it.
Yeah.
I don't remember that at all. So then when I got the one from Rob, I kind of matched up the model numbers that was on the poster and everything. I'm like, all right, yeah, it was the actual Atari version, six-switch Woody. So
right.
So they were basically just kind of like the retailer, and then they kind of got the rights to make their own branded ones.
Yeah. I think right out of the gate when they first started, they were making it. They just I guess it was some kind of extension of the deal that they made with the Pong systems that Atari made before the 2600.
All right.
So they produced it, and you could buy it only at Sears, those games, and the branded 2600 there. But you could also buy them, you know, anywhere else that you could buy video games.
Right. And so I just had a note here that I wanted to kind of talk about. Like, as I was putting this system on my entertainment stand, I'm thinking, I was moving everything around. You know how it is today. You know, you got your cable box, you got your DVD or Blu-ray and all this stuff. And I'm trying to rearrange everything and undoing wires. And then as I'm looking at it, I'm going, you know what? It really, I may just keep it in. I have a drawer that fits perfect because I'm thinking the controllers connectors are on the back of the system.
Yes.
You know, and I kind of wondered, I'm like, oh, why would they not have put them on the front? It just seems like a design flaw to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. They didn't actually change it, I don't think, until the Junior came out in 1986. Mm-hmm. And the 5200 and the 7800 had them in the front.
Yep. I bought years ago on eBay, and I want to say I paid probably $5 for them, probably $5, was these 6-foot long extension cords for the joysticks, you know? Mm-hmm. And I used them for the Commodore way back when, but they're really handy for, especially because now, I remember when the Atari even, they had wireless joysticks for a while, but it was almost like a novelty, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But now we just kind of expect that. And with the big TVs and stuff that we have today, I don't sit right in front of my television, but you know, if you have a, I don't know how long a Atari joystick cord is, 2 or 3 feet or something, you know. So if you're going to sit back a little bit, those extension cables are really handy.
Yeah,
they are.
And at least though the coax cable and the power supply cable, they are pretty long.
They
are. Yeah. I remember we used to keep it on our old, you know, our coffee table. We would pull it off the entertainment stand at my house, and we would bring it all the way over and set it on the coffee table. But now, I mean, I got 3 kids, 2 crazy dogs.
Right. So, somebody's gonna be tripping on that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I was 2 feet away from my TV. So why don't we talk about Ferg? What was the first model that you actually had, like, as a kid?
The first one I had was a Light Sixer. I got it in, Christmas of 1980. So they had stopped making the Heavy Sixer. I think maybe it was just the first couple runs in 1977, 78. I'm not really sure. But, the first one I had was a Light Sixer.
All right. How about you, Rob?
Yeah, I'm the same way. We actually had... before we had an Atari, we had the Odyssey 2, because it was, a name, Magnavox. And so it was a name that I think my dad knew, you know what I mean? And he was like, well, this is the future, not that some Atari, you know? So we went with the Odyssey 2, and it was, you bought it at Service Merchandise. And there was, I think, 1 or maybe 2 Service Merchandise stores in our town. Neither one of them were particularly close to where we lived, and the problem was we could not get games for it. We would drive all the way over, 30 minutes or whatever, and they would have the same games week after week or whatever. And so after a while, you know, other people in our neighborhood started getting Ataris, and you know, these guys were getting new games and stuff like that. So we eventually got rid of we didn't get rid of it. It's in my garage, but, we upgraded from the Odyssey 2 to the Atari 2600. And so that would have been probably 79 would be my guess, right in there. Definitely a Light Sixer for me.
All right. Well, Rob, I'm going to throw a hockey term out at you. This would be a hat trick. because I too had the 6-switch Woody.
Is this because they all wear hats? I don't really know the hockey.
We'll explain it after the show.
Okay. All right.
But it's something to do when they're skating on the court, and they get a basket, but. Anyways, that's what I had. I want to say I think it was brand new, probably 81. I'm not really sure exactly when we had it. We did have a Pong system. Mm-hmm. Was it Coleco that made the Pong?
Everybody made the Pong.
Exactly.
Okay.
Coleco made the Telstar Pong. And
That's what we had, yeah.
Okay.
The like kind of beige oval one with the 2 little... panels on. That's the one we actually had, yeah. And then we upgraded, and my parents splurged and got the... got the Atari system. Let me ask you this then, Ferg, maybe you'll know, like, what, where did this stand as far as like systems that came before it? Like, was this one of the first, or was there others other than Pong?
The first programmable system was the Fairchild Channel F, which came out an entire year before the 2600 did, or the VCS, I should say. And that was actually originally called the, was it Video Entertainment System? So they had to change their name after Atari came out. So it was around a year before, but it wasn't very popular.
Yeah,
Atari,
and
was
that was
popular.
Fairchild was the first one to use cartridges, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But Atari kind of popularized that, I guess.
Right, exactly.
Remember we used to call them cassettes? People would say, I got a new
tapes.
I got a new tape, yeah.
Yeah, Atari tapes.
Right. You're like, there's no tape in there.
Well, talking about tapes here, Ferg, we're going to move into some of our favorite games and maybe some of the games that we didn't like so much.
Okay.
But what I actually, why don't you kind of tell people a little bit about your podcast as far as games go and, well, how you know so much about them, like what you do on your podcast?
Well, I don't really know so much about them until I look them up.
It's all smoke and mirrors. Don't tell them.
That's right. Tell them how the sausage is made. No, I just, my original plan for the podcast was just to do the games that Atari made. And I wanted to do them in the order of the part number, which has always kind of fascinated me for some reason. They kind of, when they started doing the games, they did kind of like a Dewey Decimal System for the games, where the part numbers would be like, you had certain numbers were like space games, certain numbers were combat type games, certain numbers were thinking games or brain games.
Oh, I just thought they were, I thought it was all just numeric. So there was like classifications.
There were, but they had to abandon it because they didn't see it going very far, the Atari. They figured it would just sell for 3 or 4 years and that would be it. So then that's why you have in the part numbers, there are games that were made in 77 or 78. And then right next to it is a game that was made in 82 or 83.
Okay.
So they had to kind of cram them back in there and everything. But that's the way I'm going through it, and I keep that for the third-party games too. But I just kind of choose the third-party games at random.
So right. Do the third-party companies, do they have their own naming, or did they use the Atari naming?
No, they have their own system of, of part numbers. So I try to go by that. And I have had comments that people want me to do, you know, like mid-80s games, but it's going to be a while. I figure when all is said and done, it'll probably take me about 6 years to finish.
Wow.
So when you, but on your podcast, I mean, you take what, a couple, three games or so, and you really kind of get into the developers behind them and when they came out and stuff like that, right? You really get into those games.
I do my best. Sometimes there's just not any information about them. Like they're the people behind it. Sometimes they still don't know. If it was a company that wasn't around very long, they probably don't have records for it.
Now you have contacted some developers or programmers, right?
Yeah, they've been the ones that I've been able to get in contact with have been really, really nice and answered all my questions and helped me out. So that was a really cool thing. I wasn't expecting to do that when I first started. I was just gonna, whatever was on the internet was basically what I was gonna say.
Right.
But yeah. It's been really nice.
If we can get someone to program me a Breaking Bad game, we will have you on the show. We'll do a whole show about your game. I'm just throwing that out. If you want to mention that on your show, too, that's fine, too.
Okay.
Now, in the very beginning, I'm trying to remember back. Didn't you start doing like one game per show?
I was going to do one game per show, yeah. But then I figured it was just going to take way too long.
It would be like a decade or something, right?
Yeah.
Take a long time. And how many games are there? Do you know? Official, or whatever? Yeah.
I've heard between 600 and 700.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's several
years.
That's
a lot of games. But there are some games that, some companies that there's no information about, so I'll probably do the whole company in one show.
Oh, okay.
That type of thing, so.
Do you play each game?
Yeah. 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 Some of them, most of them so far I've had, but some of them I've had to use the emulators for.
Okay.
So very once cool. I get into the later games, it's going to get harder for me to actually have the games.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some that are just too rare or too expensive.
Yeah.
Or
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. And I do. I wrote down some stuff later I want to talk about. You know what? If you want right now, we can talk a little bit about rarity, because I think this is really interesting to me, because there are a couple of different guides. I was originally online. I was familiar with Atari Age.
Right.
And they had their rarity guide. And then later when I got on Digital Press, they had their rarity guide. So can you explain to the listeners a little bit? Like, I know that there's like R1, it goes up to R10, but like, so what do these rarity numbers mean? And maybe like some examples and also some prices that go with those, I guess.
Yeah. The R, Digital Press and Atari Age do the R1 to R10. Before that, Digital Press started in 91 as a fanzine, and they started putting out lists of games and rarities in their fanzine. And there was a guy named Craig Pell who also did his own lists. So I guess that I think they did them independently of each other. But eventually Digital Press started putting out rarity guides, and they would have all the rarities in there. And what they eventually came to, and what Atari Age started in 2001, I think they started, was the R1 to R10. So R1 is the lowest rarity. It's the common, which means your Combats, your Asteroids, Donkey Kongs.
So that's the stuff everybody had.
Everybody had, yeah. I looked at Atari Age's, all their rarity ones. I think there were 16 of them, and 10 of them are ones that I had when I was a kid.
Okay.
So everybody had those. And then you get to 2, and they're kind of common, but not as common as ones, obviously, but they may be like, there's also regional differences that get into the rarities too, that there may have been games that came out on the West Coast that were easier to find than they are on the East Coast, and sometimes in Canada also.
Huh.
I remember going up to Canada, going to flea markets, and there were stuff up there I'd never seen down here.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So rarity 2, let's see, I wrote this down. Where is it? Rarity 2 on Atari Age would be like Adventure, and Atlantis, you get more into the third-party companies when you get up to Rarity 2. Pitfall's in there, Pole Position, River Raid. And Digital Press actually has some of these listed as 1, and I don't think Digital Press has been updated in a while.
Okay, so these numbers changed a little bit over time then? Or
yes, because the original, that guy I was talking about, Craig Pell, his lists don't have Air Raid on them at all. Because Air Raid was thought to not exist.
Right.
And as you might know, there have been about 20 Air Raids found. That's an R10. That's the top of the heap.
So those are, I mean, why would there be a game that there's only 20 copies of?
Well, either the company didn't make that many, or the company went out of business before they could put the game out, or it was just released in a small area. Or in the case of Spectrovision, I just did a show on them. 3 of their games were only sold through the Columbia Video Game Club.
Oh,
so they were
okay.
Never sold in stores. So either if somebody didn't find them in the warehouse, then whatever was sold through the Columbia Video Game Club is all that's out there.
Okay. So my R1 Combat, if I put that on eBay, how much can I get for that?
I would say $1. $2 if you're lucky. Probably
so shipping
more
is
like
going to be
quarter.
More.
Right, exactly. All right. Exactly.
And if I go through my garage and I find that somehow I have one of the 20 copies of Air Raid.
If it's in a box, you'll get like $30,000 for it.
Awesome. Awesome.
And a little less if it's not in the box.
All right. I'm leaving right now. I'm going to go look at my garage and go see if I have Air Raid.
Stuff's going to go flying all over.
It's pretty amazing, though, that the games can be that rare and that people will pay that much for them. And
yeah.
I actually played Air Raid today, and it's basically a hack of an earlier game, Space Jockey, by U.S. Games, and it's not very good.
Right. I've seen Space Jockey on a lot of people's – well, it's on my worst list.
Yes.
So, yeah. So people aren't paying that much because it's a good game necessarily.
Right. They're paying
just because it's
rare. Yeah,
right.
And that's across all systems, really, nowadays. Yeah.
So, well, let's talk about some good games, because I made a list of some of my favorite Atari 2600 games. So I kind of told everybody, let's come up with three. And then right off the bat, I came up with 20. So I had to like cut and cut and to get down to, three games. But, I don't know that, that these are in any particular order, but probably one of my favorite Atari games was definitely River Raid. And as I'm looking at my list, two of my three top favorites here are Activision games. But River Raid and Pitfall are definitely classics. And then I also wrote Berserk just because I'm a fan of Berserk. I like the coin-op version, but the Atari version is really good, too.
It is, yeah. And I like the little glitch in the game where you can shoot through the guy's neck.
Right, yeah. His head kind of hovers over where his body is. So if you do it just right, you can shoot right through that. I also put we're not going to hold anybody to three. We're not going to hold me to three. I put Yar's Revenge. I know that's a lot of people got tired of Yar's Revenge, but I put Yar's Revenge on there. Asteroids, and I also put Laser Attack, which was a game, another Activision game. I know not a lot of people don't like it. I guess they think it's boring, but as a kid, I really liked it because it was kind of like the opposite of Space Invaders. You were the aliens on the top coming down, and you're shooting the people down on the ground. So
right, yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Sean, what'd you put on your games?
Well, the Laser Attack, is that the one where you kind of shoot the asteroids left, right, up, down, then you got to go down and kind of pick up the guys, and then there's like little lasers that shoot you from the side if you're down too low? I don't know what that is.
No, I think that's Cosmic Arc.
Yes. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
I'm not familiar with laser.
Basically, you look like a little UFO up at the top, and there are three ships on the bottom. I mean, like kind of like Space Invaders, but you're at the top, and so you're shooting the guys that are down on the ground instead of shooting the aliens that are at the top of the screen. But I should look up. You know, Atari graphic wise, I don't think was. I mean, as far as like the resolution and the pixels and stuff, I didn't look that up and. I don't want to put Ferg on the spot. I don't know if you know that stuff, but
no.
But it seems like the color palette was a lot better than, I mean, like the Commodore 64 has better resolution, but it's limited to 16 colors. And I think the Atari could do like 100, maybe 128 colors or something. I hate to quote a number because I'm sure I'm wrong, but it did have a pretty deep color palette. So they did a lot of tricks like, you know, when you were firing lasers and stuff with the color shading and stuff that made the games look probably better than they really were.
And the Activision games looked a lot more vibrant than the Atari games did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it looks like I've got at least three Activision on my list here. Yeah. So. All right, Sean, what do you got for us?
Yeah, I think most of mine are as well. But my first one, this is my favorite game, by iMagic, Demon Attack. I just love that game. I even as a kid, I thought compared to the other games that I was playing, I didn't have probably nearly as many games as you guys, but I just thought the way the game moved, the graphics, I thought were great.
Yeah, it does. Do you have that cartridge now?
Yep.
That was nice.
Yeah, that was the first game I picked up when I had talked to you about getting the Atari, and it's the first game I threw in. And I've played that on the Wii emulator. I love that game. So I was playing that with my 5-year-old yesterday. So I thought I was doing pretty good. But another one, the usual Pitfall. I always liked Pitfall. Another one I've been playing on emulation. This one, probably not that popular of a game, Barnstorming. I love Barnstorming. I sucked at it. I hated when I would hit those birds and you would bounce back. And I think that one was... like the board pretty much just repeated itself on every level. Was there like 5 or 6 levels or something, I think, on Barnstorm? I don't think it had very many levels.
Just one level. One on the one I played. Yeah. I never got to level 2. But you know, that's another one that, and like you said, for Activision games, great color. I remember the sunset and the background and I think I'm thinking of the right. Yeah. But,
yeah. And the windmills, and you had to fly through the barns. Yeah. Outlaw. I remember playing that. I have memories of that. Me and my brother playing Outlaw, and how you would just kind of shoot through the carts that would come.
The stagecoach.
Yeah. And you could kind of every time we come by, just kind of shoot by through it and everything. So I really liked Outlaw. And then Space Invaders. And kind of for the same reason. I don't know, maybe it's considered cheating, but I would always tuck under one of those barriers and kind of shoot a hole through it and kind of sit there as long as I could. So,
I was going to ask if you guys discovered the double shooting trick in Space Invaders when you were kids.
I didn't.
No.
There was, if you kind of, they call it frying now. If you kind of turn the power on and off real quick and you press the reset and you can shoot two bullets at once. And I think there's a way you can also do it without using the frying technique. I can't remember what it is now, but yeah. It's cheating, but it was a lot. it was fun.
I would have cheated any way I could. I was terrible. I love playing games, but I was terrible at them. When Space Invaders came out, this was such a big event. You know what I mean? It was like a coin op. You know, you had the coin version, and it was huge. And so my dad, and this was, I want to say this is first grade for me, actually let me skip school so we could go to Toys R Us and go get Space Invaders.
Wow.
And so we went down and we got it and came home. And I still don't know how this happened. Opened the cartridge and put it in and it was bowling. And I don't know if it got mislabeled. I don't know if there was like some guy at the factory that like opened it and he's like switched out so he could have Space Invaders and he stuck bowling. Like, I don't know how that actually, and I guess I have actually looked up and read that there, you know, I've seen other articles or people mention that they have mislabeled cartridges, you know, so I don't know how it happened, but yeah, so launch day of Space Invaders, I ended up with bowling.
Oh, that's a bring down.
Yeah. I even thought maybe like this was a side version of Space Invaders where you were shooting this ball and they were there was like 10 invaders lined up, you know, like I did the 7-10 split as I hit the invaders over there. But yeah, that was a very sad day for me.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah, but that was, you know, now we're much more advanced in the way that we look at games and ports and things like that. You know, if something's not exactly right, I mean, you know, we have MAME where we can run arcade code on our computers and someone will say, well, the refresh rate doesn't look right or whatever. I mean, we're very discerning now because we're so much more mature in the way that we do that. But back then, Space Invaders, I mean, for all intents and purposes, to me, looked like the arcade game. I mean, I didn't have the arcade game sitting next to me where I could go look at it and then look back, but it would seem pretty close to me at the time, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah, and talking about the comparison of the arcade game, like really the only – I loved Asteroids. You mentioned Asteroids, but I love it in the arcade where it's just all white and it's, instead of the color. There's a movie theater. It's like a cheap theater, we call it. You know, it's all the movies that have been out for a while go there, and they've got Miss Pac-Man. They've got Asteroids there. And
cool.
So I always jump on that. So, Ferg, why don't you go ahead and tell us some of your faves?
Okay. I guess – one of my favorite games of all time really is Adventure. That was the first game I got after we got the 2600 for Christmas. And I just love getting lost in that game. And I still remember the day when my friend and I found the secret dot and found the secret message, which wasn't really, I guess we had heard about it, but we didn't know how to find it. So we eventually did figure it out and found it, but it was kind of a anticlimactic after you actually did find it.
Right. And so you had to get a dot and take it to a room and then get a bridge and do all this stuff, right? And then and this is all undocumented stuff back then.
Right.
You know, no internet cheap thing. And then when you did that, then you got a secret message that said,
created by Warren Robinette, programmer.
There you go.
That was it.
There's the adventure.
But I still like doing it to this day. Every time I break out the Atari, I'll play a game of Adventure just for fun.
That's a nice Easter egg though for the time.
Yeah, it was one of the first, I think it was the first on the Atari and one of the first in video games. And then I guess along the same lines, I like Pitfall, but I like Pitfall 2 better because I could never beat Pitfall, but I could beat Pitfall 2.
I didn't know you could beat Pitfall for probably 20 years. I didn't know that there was an end. I thought the point was just collect as much treasure until time ran out, you know, and someone was like, you know, it was probably until I got on the internet. I mean, like on digital press and people are like, what's your best, you know, pitfall time? I'm like, for what? What do you mean what my best time is? They're like, to beat it. I'm like, oh, these guys are pulling my leg.
Yeah.
I didn't know you could beat any of these games.
Well, I can't.
You're telling me there's some sort of end to these games?
Oh, well, there was an end in my house. Yeah, I ripped them out.
7-year-old Sean never got to them.
But I guess Pitfall 2 is just kind of like a extension to Pitfall, but there's like a balloon involved, which is really cool, and snakes or eels, I guess it is, and waterfalls, and it's a cool game. And it's got the first real chiptune in Atari 2600 history.
Yeah, they added another chip to the cartridge?
Yeah, so it makes it kind of hard to emulate. And then the last game I picked was Kaboom.
That's classic, yeah.
Yes, yep. I love the paddle games. Pretty much any paddle game I enjoy. And Kaboom is my favorite one. And I actually have gotten better at it with age rather than getting worse like I am with Nintendo and stuff like that.
Yeah, there were a few good paddle games. I didn't put this on my list. I should have for a multiplayer, but Warlords.
It's
definitely a classic. And I think when you did your episode on Warlords, I sent in my Warlord story. But basically all it was is that we actually had legitimate family arguments over Warlords because my dad would not play fair. He would take, you know, and I do remember one time that he was sleeping on the couch and I was like, over a game of Warlords, you know.
But Warlords is definitely a game that transcends age.
Because I
remember bringing it to my sister's house and she had younger friends and they all went crazy for it. Once you get four players going in Warlords, it's a good time.
Mm-hmm. And that's another one that I think, personally, I think the Atari 2600 version is just as good as the arcade version. I know you don't have the, I guess the arcade has the fireball
that
goes around or whatever, but that never made the game for me, personally.
I think there's a dragon in it, too, isn't
there?
Yeah.
But yeah, that game still stands up.
That's the thing with Atari games. You don't, as long as you had the basic play structure there, you don't really need the graphics, I don't think. Because it's fun enough to play by itself. I might be in the minority
there. No, I agree with you. I think for a long time I've said, you know, the, I mean, there are games that, you know, there's, when I saw Doom and Wolfenstein, actually, when I saw Wolfenstein, I was like, this game is amazing. It is a 3D game where you run around in this environment. And then I saw Doom and I was like, okay, well, that's a little better, but it's basically the same game. And then Doom 2 and then Quake. And I was like, well, we've pretty much taken this as far as it'll go. And they're still releasing the same game 20 years later. You know, they improve the graphics every year and they're like, this is a new game, but it's the same game that I've been seeing for 25 years. So back then, and I guess, not to say this is a cop out, but they're, you know, they were inventing genres. I mean, when Pitfall came out, we were like, we didn't have a name for a side-scrolling adventure or whatever. It was just something brand new, you know. So it wasn't about the graphics. It was about – and there was a lot of stinkers too, you know. And actually, I think we all put in here a list of some games that were terrible. And one that I put on here is a game that you did a show on, Ferg, and that was Sneak and Peek.
Yeah.
Which was essentially hide and seek on the Atari 2600. And my dad used to always tell me, he used to make fun of bowling, the arcade or the Atari game, because he was like, we could go bowling right now. We don't need to play, you know, so like Space Invaders, I can't shoot aliens. I can't do that, you know, but bowling is something that or fishing. You know, every time there's a fishing game, I'm like, I could just be fishing right now. But I think the epitome of that for me was hide and seek, where you had to get your friends over and you're like, hey, we're going to play hide and seek. All right. Well, you want to count? No. We're going to play hide and seek on the Atari in this game, you know? And it just, I don't know. That one was a terrible one. Math Grand Prix is one I ended up with, which was a racing game where you had to solve math. But anything that tried to trick me into learning, I was always, I'm anti-education, just in general, I guess. down with math. And then Karate, which is one that, I never had the cartridge of Karate, but I've seen it over the years, like through emulators and stuff, and I've played it, and God, is that thing terrible. You can't even control anything in that game.
Yeah, I never had that one, and I can tell you I didn't have Math Grand Prix either. Ferg, what about you? You got some games that you definitely were like, ugh.
Yeah, I didn't really come across too many games when I was a kid that I didn't like. Even like Pac-Man, we played it. You know, that's all we had.
Mm-hmm,
so,
sure.
So we played it. But when I started collecting, there was a game called Snake that I think was made by Data Age. And that's just, I don't really know. It either came out in 82 or 83, and it looks like a 1975 game. And there's no collision. It, what's that called? Collision
detection, right?
Yeah. And it's just, I don't know what you're supposed to do. I haven't looked at the directions.
Is
or
it
anything,
like,
but it's just,
when I hear Snake, when I hear that, I think of like Surround. Is it the same type of game? Or
it kind of looks like that, but it's not.
Okay.
It's not anything like that. I don't know how to explain it right. It just looks like a cross between Surround and Centipede, but really, really bad.
Huh.
Really bad. And then there was a company called Mythicon that put out three games. I think it was during the crash. And they actually had pre-printed on the box. It was $9.99, so they weren't really expecting much from these games, I guess. And the Star Fox, Firefly, and Sorcerer. And they were all basically the same game. And again, one was like a Defender type of clone. But it's just, again, the hit detection is terrible. And it's just bad.
If you're going to release the same game three times, you should do a good game.
Right.
And then
right.
have three good ones.
Yes.
Not pick a bad one and do it three times.
But yeah, those were terrible, terrible games. How about you, Sean?
Well, I have, and it's not jumping on the bandwagon, but as a kid, I remember playing E.T., being very excited about the game E.T., and then going, what the hell is, what's going on with this thing?
Yeah.
And I remember trying to play it, and my older brother was the same way. You know, we just kind of like, all right, forget this, because we loved E.T. like everybody else, and I think everyone being very excited about it. But I still want it for my collection.
I had like Pac-Man. I always thought kind of got a bad, and I think a lot of the Pac-Man backlash has come over time. You know, I mean, at that time we knew it wasn't exactly like the arcade version, but it was still playable. It was still fun, and you know, and. Even as a kid, you accepted that the Atari was not going to do what an arcade machine could do, you know? So this is what you can play at home, and we were okay with that. But E.T., I remember we had a grocery store that had a little electronics section, and they had an Atari kiosk, and they had E.T. there. It was the first time I ever saw it, and I was like, I was like, well, that I'm pretty sure that's E.T., and that's guy from Cloak and Dagger, and I don't know, and I keep falling into caves or whatever, and I don't even know. I mean, I realize that you know, the graphics on Atari games were sometimes watered down, you know, due to system limitations, but when you can't even tell what you're supposed to be doing or what's going on, it just makes it really difficult to play, especially as a kid.
Yep. Yeah, you're right. But like I said, I still want to. I'm trying to get all the games I had as a kid, just because I have the manuals, and I just thought it'd be cool to have them in there. The other game I have is football, and I had put the number to CX2625 because when I was looking it up, it seemed like there was multiple games named football. I could be wrong, or maybe they're just later releases.
Yeah,
but this game sucked. Oh my god, it was horrible. I mean, I'm like. But again, I still want to have it in the collection because I have the manual to go with it. But it was, yeah, that was bad. And like you said, Ferg, I mean, for me, like now it's the nostalgia, you know, having, you know, I have the manuals. I want to get the games and put them in. Like, and I'll even admit, like Outlaw, I couldn't remember exactly what it was until I popped it in, and boom, I'm like 8 years old again.
Yep.
The sounds and everything. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's what it's about for me, you know, with these games. And Pac-Man, like you said, I mean, the graphics are kind of bad compared to what you got afterwards. But we just played that for hours and days in the wintertime. I mean, up here in Buffalo, you know, as a kid, that's all we would do.
You know, my neighbor across the street had an Intellivision. So I never owned a Intellivision until I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago. So I would go over and try to play with those controllers, which I just had a terrible time doing, you know, with the disc. And as a kid, you didn't know, am I supposed to rotate this or push in a direction and had all the buttons or whatever. So I thought the Atari was more playable, especially as a kid. But they had those commercials for Intellivision, and they would always compare the sports games. And that's where I remember football from, is because they would say, you know, do you want to play this Atari football? And they would show it. And I'd be like, no, I don't. That looks terrible. Then they would show the Intellivision, and the guys, their legs were actually animated, and there was you know, 11 people instead of three or whatever, you know? Yeah. So that was, I don't know. I always thought that was kind of a cheap shot, because when they would say, you know, that they would show Atari football or Atari baseball, I thought, well, those aren't, I don't ever play those games. Why don't you show the games that I play? You know, but as far as sports games, I think maybe Intellivision won that battle.
Oh, they definitely did. Yeah. The Atari, early Atari sports games are basically like the shell of the actual game, the actual sport. It's just not very good.
Then they had the real sports ones later, right?
Yeah, 82, I think they started coming out when they look more like the Intellivision games.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. So I also wrote down on here some extra add-ons that we had. I remember that, I don't remember where we got this, but, and I still have it somewhere, but it was a joystick. Well, it wasn't really a joystick. It was like a control panel that you would play, for Asteroids. And it has a label across the top of it that is like a wood panel, you know, so it kind of matched the Atari. And then it has buttons for left, right. I don't remember if it has the hyperspace. I mean, if it says that, or if it's or if it just says up and down. I remember the fire button is red, and then there's a little switch on it for auto fire. So that was really handy in Asteroids. But I had that, and I don't remember where we got that from. I want to say maybe like somebody else gave it to us or something. But I had that. I don't remember any of my other friends having that. And then we had the wireless joysticks, which, Sean, I don't know if you've ever seen these things. yeah, I think I've at the bottom it. Of it, they hold 48 D cell batteries. It may actually hold a car battery in the bottom of it. And there's jumper cables that you hook up to this thing. I remember as a kid, I could not hold it in my thumb on the fire button. I couldn't get my hand underneath. It was like that big. So you had to sit there, you know. Well, first of all, you had to plug in the receiver in to the Atari, and with these, you know, rabbit ear antennas or whatever. And then you'd have the joystick. So I'd sit all the way back on the couch. We had just got a rear projection, big screen TV. Remember those?
Oh, yeah.
And I came home, we got that TV, and we got these wireless joysticks, and I think we had just seen Firefox in the movie theater. Is that the Clint Eastwood?
Yeah.
Yeah, where he's like flying the ship and you're going through the canyons or whatever. And I came home and we had this big screen TV and I put in River Raid. And I'm like, it's going to be exactly like the movie. And I sat there. And then you have this wireless joystick that was so big, I had to sit there with it like between my legs on the couch, you know, so I could actually use it, with a giant antenna coming out the front. It was very, you know, early in compared to what we have now, with even with rechargeable controllers and all this stuff now. But back then it felt pretty futuristic, you know?
Yeah, I've only seen pictures of them. I've never seen them in person before.
Right. Well, you'll throw your back out carrying them around, if I remember right. I think they're about 80 pounds each or something.
Yeah.
I just love Sounds the fact like that the rabbit ears are sticking out of them. That's awesome.
Right. Well, and then this is what eventually happened with all of them, you know, because I remember it screwed in also, like the antenna screwed in, you know, but, you know, so you'd be playing Atari and then you'd be done and you'd go to collapse the antenna in and you would go boink and just and bend it. And then you would have a broken antenna that would go like at a 90 degree angle, or it would just break off, you know, and
just like our radios in the 80s. How many times you bust them off and you have to go to Radio Shack and pay $10 to get a new one to
that
put on.
That was it.
The Asteroids control, did it help your gameplay or?
You know, I would say for the first 20-something years that I played Asteroids, I was the never thrust technique.
Mm-hmm.
I was the spin in the middle and shoot, you know. So for that, it works really well because it's just left and right and you shoot, you know. I've used it on the Commodore, you know, for other things too. I mean, because those are, they all use the DB9, same pinout or whatever. And so I've tried other, you know, space games, like shooting type games, like Space Invaders or whatever. And it works for all those. But to answer your question, no, I'm horrible with any controller on that game. So,
you know, like probably like a lot of Americans these days, you know, I suffer from anxiety and stuff like that. And I think I first noticed it as a child when I would accidentally thrust in Asteroids.
Yes.
And I would get all sweaty and freak out over this game because, God forbid, that guy starts floating around. Well, and it was just like, oh, man. It was crazy.
All of us probably have a little touch of OCD. And so you'd shoot it off in that angle, and then you'd be like, oh, crap. And you have to turn exactly the other way and try to shoot back the other way to get it to stop. And if you're going another direction.
Just tapping the controller a little bit. Just tap the joystick a little bit.
And then there was that hyperspace, which just put me inside of an asteroid. I don't know if that's what that's intended to do, but right. That would be like, if you're tired of playing this game and would like to die instantly, pull down on the joystick, and we will help you with that.
Yeah, I didn't have any other add-ons or anything like that. What about you, Fer?
I didn't have any until I started collecting. There was the one thing I found, which was really cool, is a track and field controller, which was only put out for the track and field game, which Atari did a lot of that. They made a controller for just one game. And I think it's kind of similar to what Rob was saying about the Asteroids controller. They mapped the joystick directions to buttons because I guess, Rob, you probably know the track and field arcade game. Does that have a joystick or did that have
buttons? No, it's all buttons.
It's all buttons. Okay. Yeah. So you have to press the buttons really, really, really fast in order to get your guy to run. So they put out the track and field controller for the game so you wouldn't have to, you know, wouldn't be constantly breaking your joystick to actually play the game.
Right. You know, my dad came home one time with a copy. This is for the Apple II of Microsoft Decathlon, which was basically track and field, but for the home computer. And you could have 2, 3, 4 people play. And instead of joystick buttons or whatever, you would hammer keys on this keyboard. This is on a computer that my father had just spent $1,000 on. Come home and I've got all these, you know, kids from my neighborhood, you know, running or whatever. And in one of those moments that I understand now as a father, but I did not understand back then, somehow that disc magically got erased. And I for years I was like, what a tragedy. How could this happen? How could my one game that I enjoy playing get erased? You know, and now, I mean, if I saw my kids hammering on, you know, even a computer I have now, I'd be like, yeah, that game's gone.
The other really cool thing I found out about after the fact was the StarPath Supercharger. It's the you plug it into the cartridge port of the Atari, and it connects to a cassette recorder, and the games came on cassette, which I guess I didn't have a computer back then, so I didn't realize that a cassette was a storage unit, storage thing.
Right.
So the games, they could be a lot bigger than what the companies were putting out at the time, and they were pretty good games for the most part. And they actually put out a Frogger that looked exactly like the arcade.
So they have more storage or?
Yeah, I think at the time the games were like up to four kilobytes, and the StarPath Supercharger games were up to 6. They eventually made it up to 32 kilobytes, but I don't know how they did that.
Wow. So you talked a little bit about, you didn't have that back in the day. Oh, that's one of your, isn't that your pet peeve? That phrase
yes,
you mentioned that
yes.
on your podcast back in the day. I was going
to
try to send
I try
a,
not to use it.
I was going to send a note to try and trick you into saying it. Like I was going to use that every other word. I haven't figured that out yet. But, so I want to talk about, collecting for a little bit. I want to talk about, when, did you guys start collecting? Well, I think Sean started last week, right? Well, I mean, you had stuff originally, but now you've caught the bug again. But I want to know, from Ferg, I want to know, when did you start collecting, and what's your collection look like today?
I started in 95. We went on our honeymoon. I saw Atari games in a junk shop we were in, and that kind of rekindled it for me. So I started collecting in earnest in 95, and, you know, you couldn't fling a dead cat at a flea market without finding Atari games.
Sure, sure. Now, and was your wife thrilled on their honeymoon, where she's like, oh, I finally got this guy, and then this, and then you're like, oh, by the way, I'm going to start collecting Atari games.
No, well, she's a collector too, so she's really good about it. And she actually gave me the biggest room in the house for my game room.
So. Nice.
Yeah. So, I didn't even know about the 5200 or the 7800 until I started collecting. So once I started collecting 2600 and I found all this other stuff, I just started amassing. I think everybody goes through that. Once you buy one, you can buy this, then you buy that. So I guess around now I've got about, it's hard to count them because there's so many, like the Sears games. I don't know how to count the Sears games because they're just duplicates of the Atari games for the most part. So without counting those, I have about 400 unique games, and about 150 of them are in the box.
Okay. Oh, wow. Days.
Yeah. So right now, it's hard for me to find games I don't have that aren't super expensive because you can't find them at flea markets really anymore.
Yeah. Once eBay came out and people just decided their stuff was everything was valuable, everything was rare. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I did the same thing. I don't know that I ever. It's hard to explain because a lot of my collections are things I had as a kid that I never got rid of. So the Atari 6 switch that I have that's hooked up is the one that I had from the 70s. Yeah. I mean, it's the same one. And you know, eventually I went over to my dad's house one day and I'm like, hey, the Atari that's out in the garage, can I have that? And he said, sure. So, I mean, that's, you know, I started off with the original Atari that we had and the games that we had when we were kids. And I'm sure you did, especially during that time, that the early 90s for me was the heyday. I mean, you could go into thrift stores and games were a quarter, you know, or like I said, you would go to work and you're like, you know, you would say, hey, I got an Atari 2600 and it would be a funny thing, you know, because nobody else was doing that. And someone would come to work with a shoebox full of games and say, here's my old games. You can have those, you know? So I always just was kind of amassing that. But, I hit the wall early on, I would say, where games, the prices got more than what I was willing to pay, especially when emulation for the Atari was so good, you know? Yeah. I just wasn't willing to, I mean, when you went to garage sales and you could find them for $1 or $2 or $5, I was okay with that. But then when games started hitting 20 or 30 or 40 or whatever dollars, and I would look at one and say, this is a game that I'm never going to play. I'm just paying for this, you know, basically for to put a piece of plastic on my shelf.
Yeah.
And that was kind of where I just, you know, so I have probably a complete collection of R1s to about R4s. Like that collection looks really good for me. And then some R5s that I've run across, you know, maybe a couple of sixes here and there, but mostly I would say my stuff peters out around R5 stuff. And most of those are by accident. You know what I mean? Like, I just went to an antique place and I stopped and, you know, we go in and this lady is like, cartridges are $5 each, but if you buy at least 10, I'll mark them down to $3. So to me, all of a sudden, this sounds like a challenge, right? And I'm like, what if I buy them all, you know? And so I started looking at them, and there's a lot of actually, what was in there was the Blue Label Activision variants, which I think I only had like one or two, and they had the majority of them, you know? So I'm like, well, hitting 10 is not going to be a problem today, lady. And I'm stacking them up. But on top of that was, I think... God, there was a couple. There was Coconuts.
Oh, right.
And Private Eyes and a few other games where I was just like, I don't know what these are, but they're not ones that I recognize. They're ones that I haven't run across. So I'm like, oh, I'll just get those. But yeah, that's definitely hasn't been the norm for me for at least 10 years, maybe longer, you know?
Yeah.
So is there anything that you're still looking for your collection?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. I would love to have a complete collection, and it's probably impossible with the way some of the games are priced, but anything I don't have, I'll pick up. Especially, I collect variants. I started collecting variants really early because I kind of hit the wall of just finding new games in the 90s. So I start collecting label variants, like picture labels and text labels, and sometimes just the dates are different, and I'll buy those too.
So on variants, for the most part, the games are the same, but
games are exactly the same.
Okay, but there's something different with the label or the...
Usually, yeah, it's usually just the label or something embossed on the card itself.
Right. I think, Sean, did I send you a copy of Berserk?
Yes.
Okay, you did. So I know when I looked through mine, I was like, well, here's one that the label's in orange, and here's one where it's in green. So hopefully I didn't send Sean the one that's worth $1 million and kept the $1 one.
I think you're okay with Berserk.
I sent him my loose Air Raid cartridge. I kept the boxed one. I don't know. But yeah, for Berserk, I figure either one's probably okay. But yeah, I know there's, even in my collection, and not something that I've tried to collect variants, but I know like I have a basketball that has text on it, and then another basketball that has a picture, and so.
Yeah.
But that's like a whole nother level of OCD that if I let that take over, you know what I mean? You could, yeah. I know that there's some guys that do that with PlayStation stuff or whatever, and you could just spend, it's not the money as much as it is the time, you know what I mean? Just tracking these things down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine putting all that time. Put it this way, I couldn't imagine my wife allowing me to put all the time and finances into collecting, making a big collection of Atari stuff. But
so, Ferg, do you have you're like a real Atari? I assume you still have one hooked up today.
Oh yeah, yeah. Actually, my brother-in-law modded it for me, so it has the RCA outs instead of the RF. Mm-hmm. So it looks good. It's not in stereo, but it's mono, but it looks a lot better.
Yeah. And yeah. So you still play real Atari stuff?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You do emulation as well for the games that for your podcast.
Yep.
But if you can, you have the choice between the two, you're going to go with the original system.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Play. It's just, I do have a converter that will, I can play the emulated games with the joystick, but it's just not. It doesn't seem the same. I don't know. Not sure why. Yeah.
Well, I know like for the past probably eight or nine months when I hacked the Wii and did the emulation and I would, Demon Attack again was one of the first games and I was playing it, but just playing it the other day with the actual joystick, it's not the same. I mean, I would play the Wii emulation once in a while, but it was kind of like it was a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I did this. I can play these if I want. But it just did not have, like the other day playing it, where I felt like I was 8 years old again. I never really got that feeling, doing the emulation on the Wii.
It was
cool, but.
I got the Atari Classics on the iPad, and it has, I think when the default one you buy has like 20 games, and actually you can buy add-on packs to get it up to like 100 games. And some of those are arcade, but most of them are Atari 2600 games. And you're right. I mean, if you're in an airport and you're dying to play Yar's Revenge, well, now you can do it. You know what I'm saying? But if you're sitting at home, and you got the real thing available, I would always rather do that.
Yeah, I think I bought, I think it was Activision's Greatest Hits or something like that for my tablet. And it was cool for like 2 days. And then I was like, all right, this kind of sucks because I'm trying to use a joystick on the touch screen. And I didn't like it.
That's one thing that kind of stinks about the Atari library is that because there were so many different things, you would have to buy, the Activision one to get the Activision games. You would have to get the Atari one for the Atari games. I don't know if a Magic or anybody else has greatest hit things like that. But I bought from ThinkGeek, there's the iCade where you can put your iPad, but actually it's Bluetooth, so you can put any tablet in there. But they have what's called an iCade Mini, and it looks just like an old it doesn't look like it, but it's shaped like an old school Nintendo controller. And it's Bluetooth, so you can use it with your phone or any tablet or whatever. So, and it's compatible with all those games too. So it's a little better than the touch screen kind of stuff, but It's definitely not. If you could play it on the original stuff. Now, Ferg, you said you had a joystick. What kind of joystick do you have?
Oh, you mean hooked up for emulation?
Yeah.
It's just a regular Atari joystick.
Is the joystick itself modded?
No, there's like a little USB thing.
So you have
with
one of the...
With a 9-pin connector.
An adapter? Okay.
Yeah, adapter. That's
okay, I gotcha. Well, because I know they sell the joysticks themselves that have been modded.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. That are USB, and then they have the ones. I use... I've got a USB one that I can plug PlayStation controllers into. So for the most part, I use that for anything. But unless you're holding that Atari joystick, it just doesn't feel right, you know?
No. Yeah.
But I would still recommend anybody that's, you know, they're like, look, I'm not going to, they're listening to this and like, yeah, I remember my Atari, but they're not going to go out and search one out because you're not going to get them for $2 anymore. System, yeah. Right? You know, I checked a while back and I was just like, yeah, my wife's not going to go for, you know, because I wanted the exact model I had. Mm-hmm. But I mean, still for people that are listening and they're like, you know, I remember playing those and you have a way to emulate, whether it be on your tablet, your phone, or if you have a Wii, you want to hack the Wii, it's not that hard to do it. I mean, I would still recommend doing it. It's not the same, but the games look pretty much the same to me, at least in the sounds.
Well, and it might push you over the edge one way or the other. You might say, you know, you play some Asteroids on there, you play some Sneak and Peek, and you're like, boy, I want to play this on a real dedicated console. Then it might, you know, or it might, that might quench your thirst for it. You know what I mean? You play Pitfall in 5 minutes and you go, I guess I never liked that game. Well, then you know not to invest further. But
right.
I'm glad. I think Sean has caught the bug now. Is there places around there where you can go find more games?
Yeah. It's kind of a local chain. They've got games. I had already bought a couple from there. My wife actually brought me home a package where they just kind of seal 4 games in there, and she just brought them home. She's like, I don't know if you want any of these, but I'm like, well, yeah, mm-hmm. I'll take them. And they're not too bad, and you know, somewhere $1, $2, up to like $5 or something like that. And you know, there's a flea market. It's kind of far, and we went to an antique shop today, and it was weird because I was kind of hoping I'd find that corner that had a bunch of games, but then I'm like, I don't know if I want to find that corner because I'm going to want to buy them, and they're probably gonna be way overpriced.
You're
here.
Like, do you take American Express?
So, yeah, I'm definitely, like I said, I have the manuals. I know what games I had before. I'd like to get that just to have my setup, right, as a kid.
And dude, that's awesome because the manuals, I mean, a lot of times those are harder to find, especially in good condition than the game. So that's so cool that I guess that was something that you couldn't pop the heads off of as right. kids, yeah. Right? I'm surprised you didn't like set them on fire or whatever. So your mother must have like take them away from you. It's the only way they survived.
She had them all in a bag. They're all in mint condition. And along with the manuals, there's like 5 different catalogs and one for that cabinet thing you were talking about.
Oh.
The system. And they get, like, there's an order catalog for that.
Nice.
So it's kind of cool. And like I said, the poster that comes with it, it's got like Atari Man or something on there. He looks like, you know.
Yeah, oh, yeah. He's like a superhero kind of guy, right?
Yeah. I want to frame that and put that down in my my workshop. So,
hey, Halloween is right around the corner, right?
Yeah,
you could be, and not only could you be Atari Man, I guarantee nobody in your entire neighborhood would know what you're supposed to be.
You're right. You know, what's funny is like 2 years ago, I made my son a Jawa costume, mm-hmm. and it came out really good. And then I was like, well, crap, I want a Jawa costume. So I made one for myself, and me and my son went around. And
oh, you know, awesome.
You know how many people are like, what is this? What is that? And I'm like, are you serious? Really?
Yeah. Well, yeah, Atari Man is not.
So Atari,
they don't know what a Jawa is. They're not going to guess Atari Man. You could write Atari Man on your back, and people are like, "What's an Atari Man?"
Yeah.
You're like, it's only the greatest game system of all time.
So I'd say I kind of have the bug. It's not, definitely not on the scale of you guys, but I don't really have tons of collections. I'm starting to. I bought 2 thermoses, you know, the old lunchbox thermoses, and I posted them on Facebook today. So that's going to, and I got total approval. She's like, that would be a really cool collection. I'm like, yeah, right on. So.
I wonder if there's any Atari, I'm sure there must have been Atari lunchboxes.
Oh, that's a good question.
I will do a search after the show.
Yeah, we have to do that because that would be, now I did see, Ferg, did you see, I guess this is in the last year, the Atari Hot Wheels cars
yes,
that were released.
I did see those.
Did you see those, Sean? There's like, I think there were six different Hot Wheels that were released. And there was like a van that was said Centipede, and there was a Pong car. Yeah, there's six different ones, but then there's one that just looks like an Atari. I think it has like wood paneling and stuff or whatever, but yeah, they're, and of course, you know, you couldn't find them. Like you went to Walmart, nobody had them because, all the collectors snatched them up. Yeah, so you can find them on eBay. You can get the set of six. I think goes for around $30. Last time I looked, it's been a while. But I don't know. Those are kind of cool. But, man, if I could get an Atari lunchbox, I would take it to work every day.
Yeah, that would be cool. I'm going to do a search for that after.
You're going to have to outbid me on it. You better find two.
Yeah. I think your pockets are deeper when it comes to that stuff. You're like, I'll get rid of this kid.
No, because I know where my wife's credit cards are. That's where they go. And she'll be like, what's this purchased? Dumblunchboxes.com. I'm like, don't ask. Don't ask.
So we cover emulation. As far as like your kids, Rob, your kids like playing the Atari? Or?
No. I've tried to get him to play Atari. I've tried to get him to play Commodore. My daughter doesn't play as many video games as my son does. So she's a little bit more open to it, you know, like she'll come in and I got her to play Moon Patrol on the Atari the other day. So she liked that a little bit. I need to get that. I know I have it, the Strawberry Shortcake. Of course, she doesn't know who Strawberry Shortcake is either. So, my sister had that. I'm admitting now on the air that I used to play the, line it up so you can make Purple Pie Man dance or whatever. For my son, I think he's so far past the Atari at this point. Like, I mean, he is all Call of Duty. He is all, playing online. He's trying to show me that he built a whole city in Minecraft that's shaped like some Pokemon's head or something. I don't even understand, all the stuff he does. Right. So, as far as getting him to play Atari, I think it's too late for him. At 11, you know, with all the online stuff that he does, but maybe for, my daughter, she's 8. So what about your kids? Are they playing any of the Atari stuff since you hooked it up?
My oldest boy was kind of like, this sucks. He's 11, you know? And I said, you know what, Ethan, if this is what you had growing up, you know, you wouldn't think that. Cause when we were kids, we didn't think it sucked. We were like, oh my God, this is awesome. And he's like, no, I probably would, Dad. And I'm like, all right, whatever, go play PS3, get out of here. But my 5-year-old, Gabriel was just, he loved Berserk. He was just going nuts on it. He kept playing.
Nice.
And then I was in the kitchen cleaning up cause I was really nervous. I was like, he's like, can I play this game? Oh, hold on. Whoa, Daddy will change it. And, he learned, you know, real quick to just turn it off, pull it out, put a new one in, you know, and he was trying out all the games, but he kept going back to that one. And then my 11-year-old wanted to get it out last night. But it was like 9 o'clock, and I think it was more of a stall tactic from, you know, going to bed. And I was like, I'm on to you, kid. Right. I'm not getting it out. It's too much of a, you know, move everything to get it. I'm like, no, he's going to bed. So my daughter, she'd care less. It's all about the, you know, even my 5-year-old, it's all about the Minecraft, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Ferg, you don't have any kids, right? But have your nieces and nephews, right?
My nephew is big into Minecraft too. He's 7 and he plays that. And he was actually over this weekend and he brought me Super Breakout. Said, can we play this? I was like, sure, we can play that. And after 5 minutes, he's like, do you have Halo? Like, no, I'm sorry, I don't have Halo.
You should get that Halo for the 2600.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
I
wish like, I do that. Have Halo.
And you're like, what is this?
Well, I want to kind of talk about that before we close. You know, Ferg, where would you recommend people, one, if they're interested in learning about the games and the systems, like what site would you, because I know you mentioned a couple where you would go for that. And also, they do still make games now, or people are making them, right? Like
homebrews, yeah.
Homebrews and stuff like yeah. where you'd find stuff like that as well.
Well, the best place to find homebrews is on Atari Age. They usually release, if not, maybe all of the homebrews that come out. And people are always posting updates. They just had one that was Super Mario Brothers, basically, on the 2600, but they had to pull it from the store, I guess, because of pressure from Nintendo.
Right.
I think the best site, if you want to learn like all the ins and outs of the games and the and look at pictures of boxes and variants and stuff, is AtariMania.com. There's a guy on Atari Age. He's called ROM Hunter. He's the one that owns the site, and the site is huge. It has... Each game has pictures, scans of the boxes and the instructions and the carts, and there's videos that are related that are on YouTube, and it's big. And that's where I get a lot of my info for the show.
Yeah, and if people want to really know about the games, they got to check out your podcast.
Okay.
No, really. We love your podcast, man. When Rob talked about it, I checked out. Again, this is great. And that was before I even had my system up and running. It really got me kind of thinking, man, I really want to get a system again. That's what got me looking was your podcast.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Games.
It works for me, too, because a lot of these games I haven't played in years or never. I would put them in the system to see if they worked, and that was it
mm-hmm.
back in the 90s. So,
right. Do you have...
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, do you have any of those homebrew games? Do you get them or no?
No. The only one I have is the first one that came out called Etrus. It was a version of Tetris. It came out in 96 or 97. But the homebrew scene just exploded in the late 90s, early 2000s, and I just can't keep up.
What about you, Rob? Do you have any of them?
I don't think that I do. I've played some. I went to CGE a few years ago, the Classic Gaming Expo. They had some set up, so I had played some, but, you know, it's a lot of it is collectability, you know what I mean? So that they'll right. have a limited number of runs or whatever. And there's so many of the less expensive games that I still don't have, you know? So, normally, you know, that's what I was shooting for my collection. I've also used, Atari Museum. .com. That's a good site that has a lot of Atari history and stuff like that. And then, you know, like Sean said, now I'm getting all my info from the 2600 Game by Game podcast. I do listen to it every week. You know, I sometimes for work, I go on these road trips and I'll make myself not listen for a week or two. I'll save them up, you know. And one thing I would say about Ferg's podcast is, you know, anybody who plays the games, you know, he tells you in advance what games he's going to do on his show. So if you want to play him or if you have memories or whatever, you can email him or send in MP3 stuff, and he puts all that stuff on the air. So that's really cool that he does that. Sometimes I don't send anything because it'll just be – it's like games that I've never heard of, you know, that I don't – you know, don't have any history with or whatever. And then there's somebody you read stuff from that has his own intro music.
Yes.
How do I get my own music on someone else's podcast? I'm going to make my own music.
Send every week.
You get your own segment on Ferg's show. But all kidding aside, it is a really good show. And even if it's games that I've never played or whatever, just hearing the sound effects, the Atari 2600 had a very unique sound chip, you know, sound system. So they even if they're ones I haven't played, they sound familiar, you know.
Yeah.
They're still interesting to hear, and it's interesting to hear where you'll say, okay, well, this person did a game, and this is the same guy that did this other game or whatever, you know. And so it's interesting just to hear all the facts.
Well, I appreciate that, guys. Coming from you, it means a lot. So thank you.
He means you, Rob.
No,
I'm just kidding. This has been a great episode for me because, you know, I don't have all the knowledge of these games and the systems and all that, you know, to be able to kind of just hang out with you guys this week and, you know, have you guys kind of take over and talk about it. It was good. I really enjoyed hearing what you guys know about this. And Ferg, it was great having you on. I really appreciate
it. It was fun. I was a little nervous, but... I really appreciate being here.
And Ferg's going to pull some strings for me on this Breaking Bad game. I mean, when he talks to these, he's going to, you know, interview these old developers, and he's going to be like, hey, I got you, be like the A-team. Get like all these guys together for one last job, you know, get everybody back together. Hey, you know what? One other thing I would mention is the book. I don't know if you've read this or not, Ferg, Racing the Beam.
Yeah.
That is a fantastic book. If you are interested in the Atari 2600 and programming, they go through like several different games, and they talk about what it took to develop the games. And I mean, I'll be honest with you, there's some technical parts of it that were over my head.
Right.
But it's fascinating to me. And Ferg mentions on his podcast each week the size of the game, the ROM size. And most of them in the early ones are either 2K or 4K, which is an amazingly small amount of ROM to program a game in. I mean, like 2K is less than probably, you know, a quarter of a second of this audio stream. I mean, it's it's nothing. You know, my avatar on every forum I'm on is like 20K. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's just a tiny fraction bit of code. There's a whole chapter on Pitfall where he's explaining that he couldn't display the score because he had to do something else. Like he had to take something out of the game to have enough code to display the score. And he had to, you know, mirror the background to save space because the left half of the screen has to be the same as the right half of the screen in the background. I mean, it's really fascinating, and it gives you insight into what it took to put those games together in such a small amount of code.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool stuff, man. Yeah, well, I think that's going to probably wrap it up for our Atari 2600 episode. Ferg will be on next week when we cover the 5200. no, but... Ferg, you give us some more plugs, plug your site, your podcast, any other things you want to say?
Well, you can find the 2600 Game by Game podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher. You can do a search on Facebook. We're on Facebook. I don't know. We're out there. Just type
and
in
Twitter, Atari. Right? You're on Twitter?
Oh, Twitter too, yeah. If you type in Atari 2600 podcast, we'll come up. So, or we, meaning I.
Very good. Yeah, everyone, you got to check out Ferg's podcast. Very good stuff. And Rob, what about you, buddy? Any last words for you?
All this makes me want to do, I want to hurry up and get off this so I can go play Atari games. That's all. I'm like all pumped now. Of course, you can find my stuff at robohara.com. And normally I plug You Don't Know Flack, but I think this is like the second week in a row I've missed or something. I'm behind on episodes. I got to go check my CNN as soon as we're off here. So if I'm furloughed, then I'm going to do like 800 episodes this week. I'm just going to have all the time in the world. My next episode, You Don't Know Flack, will be about government furloughs.
Well, you've been busy, man, traveling and everything, so it's kind of hard to.
Yeah, it's definitely been hectic. Oh, you know, last weekend was the Oklahoma Video Game Expo up in Tulsa, so that's why I didn't record last week. And that was, I think the attendance was like 500 people, but it was all these tables set up and people playing retro video games and stuff. So that was a lot of fun. There's a lot of Atari stuff there, you know, so did that. And then last weekend, yeah, I was out of town for work. So, I'm going to do an episode. I already did an episode on the Atari 2600. So I can't do another one. I'll do part two.
Yeah, and that was a great episode.
Yeah.
All right, then. My stuff, I mean, just go to the website. You can find links there for my Twitter or whatever. But also, if you're listening, you got an Android phone and you like applications, I co-host on Android App Addicts that you can go find at podnuts.com/AAA. And it's a good show. We just kind of, four of us, we talk about Android apps and stuff like that. So, and as far as our Twitter, you can go to the website. Like I said, there's a link for our Twitter @ throwback review. There's a page, Facebook page. So there's a link there. If you like what you're hearing, we'd totally appreciate some likes on our Facebook page. And my dog there would like it too. and iTunes. Thanks to anybody who's left us a review and a ranking or a rating. If you can do that, we'd greatly appreciate that as well. And one last thing. Thanks to Pixelate for the intro and closing music. We always like his stuff. And you can go over to soundcloud.com/retropeachy to find more of his stuff. So that's going to wrap up this week's episode. Until next time, thanks for listening. Dog, really?